President Trump halts a retaliatory strike on Iran.
President Trump himself, you know, has wanted to be firm on Iran, but he also campaigned on the premise that he would extract American forces from the Middle East. So he's been conflicted as well.
Tensions between the U.S. and Iran remain high after Iran downed a U.S. military drone. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Before we get to our main story on Iran, here are some other top stories from today. The Dow briefly flirted with a record closing level on Friday, but ultimately ended the day short of a new record. The blue chip index rose as high as 26,907 in intraday trading. But at the end of the day, the index shed 34 points to close at 26,719. The S&P 500 and the Nasdaq also fell 0.1% and 0.2% respectively. The S&P had hit a record close on Thursday. An investigation by U.S. Attorney General William Barr into the origins of the Russia probe is reportedly looking into U.S. intelligence gathering that found Russia intervened to help then-candidate Donald Trump win the 2016 presidential election. The conclusions have been affirmed by Special Counsel Robert Mueller and the Senate Intelligence Committee. The Wall Street Journal reports that intelligence officials are expressing concern that the U.S. Justice Department could challenge those findings. The U.S. Supreme Court on Friday reaffirmed a rule against racial bias in jury selection, voting 7-2 to overturn the murder conviction of a black defendant in Mississippi. The Wall Street Journal's Jess Braven has more details.
The case involves a man named Curtis Flowers. This was his sixth trial before he was ultimately convicted and sentenced to death for these murders. The way the Supreme Court looked at it was really the totality of the experience since the 1996 crime, how over the course of that time, over the course of six trials, 41 out of 43 African-Americans who were in the jury pools over that time were removed by the prosecutor, and that there were many, many, many indications in the record that the prosecutor, and it was the same prosecutor in all six trials, Doug Evans, the local prosecutor, elected DA down there, had been going out of his way to get black people off that jury and had asked questions of potential black jurors that he didn't ask of similarly situated, if you will, potential white jurors. And the jury that ultimately convicted Curtis Flowers had on it 11 whites and one black in a town that is about 55% black, 45% white.
Braven says the court acknowledged it was not breaking new legal ground, but reaffirming its commitment to removing racial bias from the criminal justice system. The district attorney in Mississippi will now decide whether to retry Flowers. The U.S. Soccer Federation and the U.S. women's team have agreed to go to mediation to resolve a pay discrimination suit filed against the federation by the 28 members of the team. The Wall Street Journal reports that the mediation would begin after the World Cup ends. The players allege the federation denied them equal play, training, and travel as compared to the U.S. men's team. President Trump says he's in no hurry to confront Iran after tweeting on Friday that he called off a retaliatory strike 10 minutes before it was set to happen, after learning that 150 people would be killed. Tensions remained high between the U.S. and Iran on Friday, a day after Iran downed a U.S. drone. Joining me now from Washington with the latest details is Wall Street Journal reporter Michael Gordon. Michael, let's recap what's happened since this morning. We heard a lot from the president on Twitter about what transpired overnight on Thursday and into Friday.
Well, it's been a roller coaster ride for the last 24 hours, to be honest. Yesterday, President Trump issued what I consider to be some conflicting messages about how he intended to respond to the shoot down of an American drone by the Iranians. And at first he said it was a big deal, and then he appeared to give Iran an off-ramp by saying that perhaps it wasn't authorized. And at the end of the day, and something I've never seen in all my years of covering the Pentagon, he authorized a strike and before it could actually be executed, called it off because he claimed he hadn't really realized the implications of the action he had approved.
And we are now hearing reaction from more members of Congress amid higher tensions between the U.S. and Iran. What are you hearing from lawmakers in Washington as this continues to develop?
Well, I mean, you know, it depends what side of the aisle you're on. But obviously the Democrats are not interested in a military confrontation with Iran. And I think they left the briefing yesterday at the White House concerned that action might be taken without their approval. And the Republicans, I think, are conflicted. I mean, there many of them think it's important for the U.S. to be firm with Iran. Obviously, if the Iranians are shooting down American drones and planting mines in international warships, there's a lot of the Republicans sort of instinctively think there should be some sort of American military response. But interestingly, some of the foreign policy experts who are really hard line on Iran don't favor military action. They say that the U.S. is applying sanctions. They seem to be working. They're going to have even more effect over time. And the U.S. would simply be playing Iran's game by being drawn into a kind of tit-for-tat military confrontation in the Gulf, one in which Iran would probably be perceived in the eyes of many people in the world community as potentially the victim and not the culprit. So the Republicans are divided. President Trump himself, you know, has wanted to be firm on Iran, but he also campaigned on the premise that he would extract American forces from the Middle East. So he's been conflicted as well.
Now, both the U.S. and Iran have said they're not looking to go to war with each other, but there are certainly a lot of issues to resolve, and none of them have easy solutions. What are you hearing from experts about what we are likely to see playing out in the days and weeks ahead?
I think we're going to have months of tension and possibly additional military episodes in the months ahead. I mean, the administration withdrew from the 2015 Iran nuclear accord, which I covered, and which put limits on Iran's nuclear program in return for sanctions relief and giving Iran the right to enrich. And the administration has come in with even far more stringent demands, an end to all Iranian enrichment, a withdrawal of all Iranian forces from Syria, an end for all Iran's support for Hezbollah, the Lebanese militia. So the Trump administration has staked out a very tough stance, which is almost certainly non-negotiable. The Iranians on their end had recently been trying to uphold the 2015 agreement, but they've been unhappy that the American sanctions have blocked them from obtaining the economic benefits, primarily from European companies. So they're now threatening to exceed the limits in the 2015 agreement by June 27th if the Europeans don't come across. So there's a bit of a game of chicken on both sides. I think the prospects for a new deal are very low. I don't think anybody really expects that to happen, but it is possible that there might be negotiations of some kind as a way for the Trump administration and the Iranians to at least avoid a full-fledged conflagration.
That's The Wall Street Journal's Michael Gordon joining me from Washington with the latest on tensions between the U.S. and Iran. Thanks so much, Michael.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Progress in combating the nation's number one killer, cardiovascular disease, has stalled. The cardiovascular death rate is also rising among middle-aged Americans, including women and non-smokers. The Wall Street Journal's Betsy McKay explains it's being driven by a rise in obesity and diabetes, which are eroding the gains made in fighting cardiovascular disease since the 1950s.
Cardiovascular death rates declined more than 70% since they peaked in 1950. But those sharp and pretty steady declines suddenly slowed in 2011. It was kind of an inflection point, and they have fallen just 4% since then, or until the end of 2017. But most alarming is that the death rate is actually rising for people who are between the ages of 45 and 64. So it has gone up, the cardiovascular disease death rate has gone up 1.5% since 2011 for that age group. That doesn't sound like much, but given that heart disease is the biggest killer already in this country, it's a huge cause for concern.
McKay says there are no easy solutions to the problem.
now, short of a breakthrough new drug, you have to find something like that to get people to help get people to exercise more, help them eat healthier and lose weight. And you have to make these the default choices in our lives. That means, you know, moving mountains, really changing the foods that are most available to us and the patterns of our daily lives. So, you know, a lot of public health officials would say there has been a lot of progress on this over the past couple of decades. We certainly are exercising more. We're much more aware. But heart disease is still the biggest killer in this country. So clearly there's a lot more to do.
To read the full story, head to our website, WSJ.com or the WSJ app. And we'd like to hear what you think. What should the U.S. do to make progress against cardiovascular disease? Let us know with a comment on our website or by tweeting us at WSJ Podcasts. That's what's news for this Friday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.